Take a command prompt from any artificial intelligence software, and there isn't anything it can't do. At least it seems at the outset it is creative, or it helps the creative process. It can bring to life whatever you can type. And there is a new artificial intelligence assisted film and video production course that is launching at UW-Stout this summer. The course, according to UW-Stout, is likely the first of its kind in the universities of Wisconsin, developed by three members of the video production faculty, and we have two of them joining us today on the Lee Rayburn Show. So what questions do you have about AI in film and TV, where you see it, how it's being used, and the future of artificial intelligence with our entertainment? Join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. Our guest, Johnny Wheeler, Assistant Professor of Video Production at the UW-Stout School of Art and Design. Johnny, welcome to you.
Thanks, Lee. I appreciate that. It's great to be here.
Also joining us, Ko Neal, lecturer in the video production program at UW-Stout School of Art and Design. And Ko, welcome.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Yeah, Ko, you've got a couple decades of experience in film, TV, and advertising. And out of the gate, where are we seeing AI used in film and TV today?
Well, one of the reasons I got into the business is because I was hired as someone coming out of the realm of actually editing on physical film and into the realm of editing on computers. And there was a lot of resistance at that time, too, you know, late 90s, 97, 98, where you're going from giant films exclusively edited on actual cellulite, where people are slicing physical film and resistant to using a computer, like they don't trust it because the data was going in and they didn't know where it goes. They couldn't touch it with their fingers. It's very similar now, where the tools are changing, or it's not even changing. You can still use film if you want. You can still use a computer if you want. It's how people are using the tools and who adopts them and who doesn't. So same uproar 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting because my predecessor, Larry Mueller, talks about how when he was teaching radio, it used to be the old tape, magnetic tape, razor blades, and then a little scotch tape to put it all together. And that is how you did radio editing. And then it was in the early 2000s, late 90s, when you had audio workstations become available and it all became digital. Although the classic rock station that I worked alongside was still insistent on using the reels to reel to reel, because that was the real deal. Johnny Wheeler, you are developing something about from the old English epic poem Beowulf that takes place in a post-human Earth with an ape as the hero. How are you using AI in this?
To that last point, too, I should say when I went to art school, I minored in photography, and I had a film teacher tell me that digital was a passing fad. This was in the 90s.
Yeah.
I think the Beowulf story kind of came about thinking of an older story, talking about it in a new way or putting it through the lens of AI, because it's a story that I was familiar with, you know, since childhood. I thought it would be sort of a good baseline for telling a story using artificial intelligence. Using an ape was kind of, instead of using an actor, which, you know, I can get my hands on probably an actor, but I couldn't necessarily get my hands on an ape to be the main character of a story. So I thought maybe this was another perfect opportunity to use AI to overcome a limitation that I might have as a filmmaker.
So what are you hoping that this course imparts to college students at UW-Stout, Johnny?
I think for me, for students to learn more about storytelling, to learn more about using AI, or at the very least, understanding more about how to use it and use it ethically. If they can come into the class wanting to tell a story and then using AI to overcome any kind of limitation they might have to tell that story in a way that they want to, that would be a success from my perspective as an instructor.
And Colt, what do you see as the limitations to AI when it comes to film and TV?
I think it's a lot of it is the, you know, the perception that it is some kind of evil coming in to remove all authenticity. And that's just because of the way it's been introduced to the world with like Will Smith eating spaghetti and whatnot. So the limitations are going to be just like using any tool, where people say it's some great democratization of filmmaking, but if you don't know how to write prompts, you don't know how to tell a story, I mean, the story still does the work, ideas still do the work. So the limitation is always the user, right? And if people don't learn how to get the AI to do what they want, then it's just people eating spaghetti.
So does this have the potential of being the great democratization of filmmaking, Johnny, as you see it?
Yeah, I think it has that potential. I think it has the potential to do a lot of things. But like with any tool, it kind of depends on who's using the tool. You can use it in such a way that it's not beneficial to a story at all. But at some point, if you really learn how to use it, learn how to tell a story, you can use it to tell a great story. I think about how we had DSLR cameras come out and made it so that we could democratize storytelling in a way where we didn't have to purchase a really expensive cinema camera. And right now, my students have access to even cell phones that can, you know, shoot really great video and really great audio. And so in a lot of ways, all that democratizes what we can do in cinema, but it also makes it so that there's a lot to learn about how to do it well.
I was thinking about in big Hollywood movies, the criticisms of some CGI computer-generated imagery. And are there similarities between CGI and AI? And will there be the same criticisms when it comes to how it is being employed in production and post-production? Co, I'll ask you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when CG first came in and it was kind of clunky and people said it wasn't believable, and it was about people learning those tools and getting better at them. And now we're in an era where, you know, it's indistinguishable, and that's going to happen with prompt, you know, generative AI, where people eventually get skilled enough to get the shots exactly as they want them. And the danger or the threat is that jobs are being replaced by, you know, other people rather than, you know, all this time we've built up learning CG and now you've got to learn how to prompt. But I don't see it going away. So I just like CG, I think the trick is to learn it or at least be aware of it. And it'll be funny, I mean, to think about it, people our age remember time before CG, and it'll be funny to look back and think about this old way of doing things, which is using, you know, computer generated software when you can just actually type something in and have it come out.
But isn't there something that still feels warm and comfortable about Star Wars compared to the original Star Wars compared to the latest Star Wars iteration?
That's right, because of the tactile nature and actually light bouncing off physical objects, which they've had difficulty reproducing even with, you know, really elaborate software. But then when it's done right, you know, Jurassic Park was 36 years ago, and that it still hasn't been equaled in terms of CG matching with real elements. And it'll be a long time before, you know, people who really pay attention to VFX or movies are able to, you know, not tell the difference between the two, but large audiences will. And also, you know, there's tiers of entertainment, right? You have kids stuff. And that's where CG started, because nobody cared if Toy Story looked like garbage, because the kids just like the story and they like the characters.
But you take a look at the difference of quality in animation from Toy Story, the original, to the one that just came out, Toy Story 5, I believe, and it is leaps and bounds different.
That's right. And that's, you know, more adults go to those movies now, yeah, and they expect a higher quality. And so you'll see children's entertainment or entertainment for foreign markets made 100% with AI, and those audiences won't be quite as discerning.
Co O'Neill there, lecturer in the video production program at the UW-Stout School of Art and Design. Johnny Wheeler also joining us, assistant professor of video production at the UW-Stout School of Art and Design. And you're welcome to join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. There is a new class this summer, and it is teaching the integration of AI in film and television production. And is there a final exam or a final project that these students will be doing, Johnny?
They will be expected to make a final video, so a final cinema project. And it could be a preview for a story that they've been developing, or in some cases, it could be a complete video project. Less than 5 minutes, though, very short.
And so, but I think we, as a media consumer, I think of AI being used on what I am seeing or what I am hearing, but AI can be used in every step, or could be potentially used in just about every step of the filmmaking process, right? So how do we see AI in something like pre-production?
It's a great question. And I think that you can develop a story using AI. I know writers that, you know, would really think that's a bad idea. And honestly, I think that a lot of the stories written by AI are bad because they are sort of an amalgamation of other stories. So they don't really have that human touch. Hopefully our students are able to discern between what a human written script looks like and what an AI written script looks like. But then they can move that into pre-production, like storyboarding. And AI can storyboard really fast and really easy, especially for students who aren't really into drawing. That could be a really big lifesaver for them to help plan their story. They can use it for structure. So they can have AI look at their work and figure out how the beats might work in their story and give them feedback on it. I think they can even use it to help them make a storyboard into an animatic so they could kind of watch their movie before they actually start making their movie. There's a lot of really great ways to develop a story using AI.
And yet, as we talk about the technology, I can't help but think of how the technology seems to continue to evolve, that the programs that we use continue to change or update. And so, Ko, how can what these students be learning in this class currently about AI and film and TV be updated as the technology continues to, it seems, exponentially develop?
Yeah, that's almost impossible right now because it's changing weekly and you have so many different platforms and everybody keeps skipping around. And a lot of it, it's kind of a distraction. It's kind of like the way students talk about, oh, I must use a Sony camera, or a Canon camera, or whatever. And they just keep skipping to the next release because it's a, you know, it's a stall tactic from actually making work. But the other thing too is that as those tools change, people, how people use them change. And I think the important thing to impart to students is that it is not an automatic time-saving device. It's another tool and it's going to take you time to learn it and how to get what you want out of it. Otherwise, you're just compromising with whatever results it gives you. And that's not how you make art or narrative or whatever. Mm-hmm. And a great comparison is, Christopher Nolan. You're always working around the technology because Christopher Nolan's coming out with The Odyssey, which was the first movie entirely shot on IMAX. And they were literally cutting every 2 or 3 minutes because the camera rolls out. Like the performances had to change based on how the technology worked. So that's the same thing with AI. It's the same thing with CG and any camera you use. A lot of times the narrative and the story and the performances change based on the limitations of the equipment.
It's interesting because I think of it from the frame, what I see in the image, but there is an entire industry that is outside the frame that helps make that possible, and that would include the camera, and so the technology is part of what I end up seeing as a final product.
That's right. You choose where to point the camera, just the same way you would choose how to prompt to get the virtual camera to point a certain direction or give you the certain frame. That's going to take as much time as pointing a real camera. So it's not a time-saving device.
And that's where the lesson is too for students is figuring out, you know, how to prompt in the correct way.
Yeah, to get the result that you want and the frame, to get the frame that you are trying to use to express yourself. Let's go now to your questions and comments for our guests who are the faculty who helped develop this new course on AI and film and TV at UW-Stout. You can join us 1-800-642-1234, where Tony and Hyland standing by. Hi, Tony.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have been a filmmaker and animator for about the past 35 years. And I was speaking with a bunch of students at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design a few years back, and I had a young student approach me about how much she loved Japanese anime of the 80s and 90s. And I agreed with her. I loved a lot of those films and stories. And her next question was, is there an AI app that would let me make these? And I said, I didn't think there was. And I said, the reason these films were so good is that these animators loved the process of drawing 8, 10, 12 hours a day. They were passionate about it. And she said, well, I can only draw about an hour and then I get bored. And so I feel bad that young people and students they won't understand the wonder of the process. And at the same time, we might have a lot of passionless projects coming out because it's easier for them to make the film so they can do it at the snap of a finger rather than using their years and years of passion and loving the process to come out with something finer.
I can, to some degree, I can see, you know, in social media, what we're seeing now is AI slop, just sort of stuff thrown out there by a command prompt. So how does that translate in terms of making quality work in the film and TV using artificial intelligence and keeping the slop at bay. Johnny, you want to answer that?
I think about it all the time. Thanks for that question. I think about it constantly. For students these days, even to get some of my video students to watch a feature-length film is tough because, you know, they'll go look at their phones within 10 minutes of it. It's sort of this changing nature of who the creators are going to be. Using AI in some ways to help, you know, to help them make something that they want to make is sort of a hopefully a jumping off point. They'll discover the beauty of making something more hands-on, say by drawing cell by cell. Hopefully, if we can teach them how to understand the basics of what they're doing using something like AI. I don't think of AI as being an end product in a lot of cases, especially an end creative product. I think of it as a tool to reach a creative product, not necessarily the end goal in itself. Or at least that's the hope. It's the hope that we can get students to discover, say, great anime like Akira or Ghost in the Shell and figure out how to do that themselves. And, you know, if they get bored after an hour, then, you know, maybe it's not quite the right thing for them and they can, you know, move on to a story that they might want to tell. They don't get bored after an hour.
But, and thank you for the call, Tony. AI does bring up some questions. General AI brings up questions about ethics. It brings up questions about the environment. AI slop brings up questions about art choices, art, you know, our aesthetic. So how is this class going to help students navigate some of these bigger questions about artificial intelligence, Johnny?
Another thing I've been thinking about so often, especially when I hear about data centers and I think about the environmental impact of data centers, I think the key is going to be in intention. So having students, teaching students how to create with intentional ideas, with the idea that they're going to come at it with intention and not just make things scattershot or just make things because they can, but make things that they want to make on purpose. So they can use these tools in such a way that it gets to an end goal that they want to be at, instead of just sort of, making slop to make slop because it's cool. Instead, you know, make something they want to make using AI as a tool to do that. Using it in a considerate way, using it in a deliberate way, I think is a big goal of the class.
And Ko, I want to get your reaction to that and how you help pass that on to the students in this course.
Yeah, well, one of my past gigs years ago was at Will Vinton Studios, which became Leica, which was a stop motion facility. And it's still a stop motion facility. And there is something about that kind of tangibility and stuff. And I can tell you, going back to the 90s or before, that there's never been a period where students weren't impatient to get to the end result. So they want to skip to the end and I want to be an animator. And it doesn't matter if the middle was AI or if it was some CG automator or a Snapchat filter, like they just want to get to the end result. And so part of what you're teaching is that patience and that ability to dig in and work towards results through iteration and not just like, oh, I'll just take what I get on the first try. Mm-hmm. And even in sports, you know, the kids who don't get it right away often quit. And it's the people who don't quit that stick to it that end up being real artists. And that's what it's about.
So as I hear you describe this course at UW-Stout, it makes me think that this is potential for small filmmakers, for indie films, for, as mentioned, the great democratization of the filmmaking process, that this could provide a path for those who wouldn't necessarily have the means or the inroads in Hollywood to be able to express themselves in film form. Johnny?
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead, Cole. Sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's not free, you know? And so I think there's this idea that it's a free tool, and there will always be free tools, but it's just like the first one's free, you know? And then next thing you know, you're spending, some guy made a pretty good short film, it's on YouTube, and it cost him $20,000 in credits. So it's not just because it's accessible, which is a democratization part, it's not necessarily automatically accessible to everybody.
I do think that's an entryway. It's an entry point that wasn't there before, where students or people who are interested in making things could have a barrier to entry that's a little less than it used to be, even just a couple of years ago. But Ko's right. After you get past that entryway, you know, there's still a long ways to go, which could cost money or resources or time that you would see in a traditional, you know, filmmaking setup.
So, but as we talk about, as I hear most reactions about AI and arts, I think most often about how big studios are employing it and how there are now AI actors. Tilly Norwood, an AI, is there such a thing as an AI actor? And if there is, I mean, Johnny, you've got this short film about Beowulf with an ape, but what about a real human being that isn't a real human being?
Lee, I think you really touched on why I used an ape instead of a real human being. I don't know. I think Tilly Norwood is an interesting experiment. I don't think we'll ever replace actors. Right now, I think Hollywood is using a lot of AI to use the likeness of actors. And I feel very strongly that those actors should always be compensated, even for their likeness being used. I think that there's a lot of ethics to work around in the industry, a lot of copyright to work around in the industry to make it more ethical for artists. I don't think right now we're there. And I think we should try to get there as soon as we can.
Co, what's your take on Tilly Norwood?
I think it's kind of a marketing ploy. A lot of studios are rushing to some kind of result, and it's not to save money. I think they're trying to save on soft costs like hiring and firing. And the industry, especially in visual effects, you hire up 2,000 people to work on a movie and then they all get laid off. And that's been around since forever. And so they're trying to stabilize that and just say, hey, here's a path. We have this stable of regular folks who can type prompts. And I don't think AI actors are going to really take on. I mean, people respond with their money, and Obsession is a great example of a small movie with real people in it, mm-hmm. and some simple VFX and a lot of practical stuff. And then you take the opposite end with The Odyssey again, which is done largely practically and is already selling out all around the world. And I don't want to be the old guy who says this will never, digital is a fad. Maybe there will be a time when, AI can write scripts and put in AI actors and people actually find it entertaining. I think that's quite a ways off.
Johnny, mm-hmm. can you give us a brief overview of some of the software that these students will be using?
Well, it changes all the time. So the software really does change quite often. Google Gemini is one that we use a lot because it's something that remains consistent. It's fairly ethical when you compare it to some of the other kinds of programs we get to use. Also at the university, of course, we have to get permission from the folks at the university who take care of that kind of thing. So Google Gemini was the one that we got early permission to use, which is good for script writing, storyboarding, image creation, video creation, the different versions of that, like Veo is a part of it too.
So how would you use this software for script writing in a way that it takes advantage of artificial intelligence without letting artificial intelligence take the reins of the story?
I think a lot of it is prompt generation. So figuring out exactly what it is that you want to get out of the software, and then understanding that the software isn't going to give you something that you don't have to check all the time. It's always going to give you bad stuff. And so you have to check and recheck and share it with your classmates and share it with me, the instructor, so you can figure out how to then make a second prompt to refine that or to take it and, rewrite it yourself by hand. I think that leaving it up to even Gemini to do things for you is the wrong way to go. And it can feel like you can do that. It can feel like you can just, type in a prompt and take the first first thing, the generation that you get, but it's going to take a lot of effort and rigor to kind of figure out what it is that you want it to do and then, figure out how to take out of it what you need to take.
Is this course around for good now at UW-Stout? Is this a trial run or will we be teaching this for years to come?
It's definitely a trial run. It's in a beta phase at this point. If we can run it for a couple of semesters, we'll probably go back at it and refine it quite a bit. We wrote it specifically not to be too specific to software, so it's pretty agnostic when it comes to the things that we can do. So we wrote it to future-proof it, hopefully. But, I think that we'll find that we need to refine it as it goes forward. But some version of it will probably always be in the course catalog, I'm willing to bet.
Well, then I look forward to catching up with both of you in semesters to come. Johnny Wheeler and Co. O'Neill at UW-Stout, now teaching artificial intelligence in film and television production. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.